Well, we're excited to see Octave Bio emerge from stealth mode, and congratulations on the $30 million raise. And for those of us who are not molecular biologists, could you explain what you mean when you say Octant wants to design better drugs that act on multiple targets or disease pathways?
The efforts in pharma over the last really 30 or 40 years have been about, hey, these kind of drugs that we discovered in the past, I hit a lot of stuff, these are dirty drugs. We should be a lot more specific about that. And so that's led to a series of revolutions in the practice of drug discovery, which is a term that's known as like target-based drug discovery, where people find a particular target or particular protein that they want to go modulate. And you can design more and more specific drugs for them. And so there's been a series of technologies like structure-based drug design, sometimes artificial intelligence, sometimes everything from antibodies, which are way more specific than these kind of more general natural products or drugs that have been discovered mostly by accident. That has really worked for a certain class and subset of diseases, mostly around cancer and rare diseases. But hasn't really worked for like these kind of big common disease areas that that most people are affected by. So all the neurological diseases, pretty much all the like metabolic diseases, a lot of the immune diseases. These kinds of diseases are quite genetically distinct from rare diseases and cancer. In rare diseases and cancer, you have like a very specific mutation or small sets of mutations that really drive a disease into pathology. And so that specificity really helps. I think the bet that Octant's taking is that this target-based approach, which focused on a single protein, might have been a little bit misguided in big complex disease areas. And our efforts are really to build the technology stack, both hardware and software, that would allow us to really uncover the complexities of multi-targeted drugs and multifactorial diseases and engineer molecules that can do that rationally.
Now that we're talking about diseases, and the disease on everyone's mind, of course, is our pandemic, COVID-19. And you've responded really to the global call for collaboration by open sourcing part of your platform. Tell us more about that.
Basically, one of the things that we have optimized over the last several years has been a very highly sensitive, but also highly multiplexed and cheap methodology to measure RNA at scales that are very large. Like we run this internally once a week, you know, on the order of 5 to 10,000 wells at a time. We shut down during the pandemic when the Bay Area was shutting down. A few of us were all talking about the pandemic, and you know, we had thought that testing would scale, and that wasn't scaling. I think there was a realization that we could definitely use this type of technology for measuring the RNA virus, which COVID is an RNA virus or SARS, and we could actually use it as an RNA detection platform for that testing. We just wanted to see if that was the case, and it turned out that that was the case. Our platform ended up being really sensitive and quantitative and cheap and in a way that could scale. The decision we made then was that we were very excited by our drug discovery efforts. We didn't want to become a testing service. There's definitely a lot of expertise that goes into the clinical accessioning, and there's a lot of other downstream limitations on like how many swabs can you get? How do you accession samples? That I don't think we would have been good at answering, given our team and where we were. And so we decided to open source the technology under the Open COVID license for the pandemic to allow others to use it. And that's been taken up by a lot of people, and that's been really exciting. So we've been mostly supporting these other partners that range from nonprofits and universities to companies as well.
Well, Ramsey, how did you two meet? And tell us how you came up with the big idea that has become Octant Bio.
Yeah, so Sri and I have known each other a long time through family, actually. And Sri had also done a bunch of entrepreneurial work earlier in his career. And we used to talk about how sort of being in a biotech company was different than being in a tech, like a software computing tech company. And then, you know, over the last 10 years or so, there has just been a massive revolution in a lot of sort of the very core layers of biotechnology. A lot of those revolutions, Sri has played a large part in developing. And what you've seen is sort of this information explosion where in the last 5 to 7 years, we've had cost reductions and throughput increases in things like DNA sequencing, DNA synthesis. So that's, you know, building little strands of DNA or reading strands of DNA that are really the equivalent of like 30 years of Moore's Law. And so can you imagine being, Sri often says this, can you imagine being a computer scientist in 1985 and someone walks into your office 5 years later and gives you computers from like 2015, right? Like, what would you do? And the answer is most people would probably just like make a faster Pong or a faster Excel. People like in discussions with Sri, we both really agreed that something fundamental had changed and people were not taking advantage of it. There were still sort of like, we couldn't even keep, our imaginations couldn't even keep up with how different the world could be in this new sort of technology construct. And so we just started talking about what were the different possible business models? What were the different possible company models? Like, how would you build excellent teams that could really not only use those advances, but also work in a lot of what had been happening in computing to sort of like build the next generation biotechnology company. And the more we talked about that and kicked around ideas, the more we sort of got very clear on what we didn't want to do. And then one day, a bunch of research results had come out of Sri's lab in the areas of what are now today Octant. And we just both got extremely excited about them. And for a couple of weeks, we were talking about sort of how do we incubate this? How do we go find people to build this company? And then one day we just looked at each other. We're like, what are we doing? Like, this is too important to just try to incubate. We should both just stop what we're doing and go do this ourselves. And we both took the plunge.
Why did you guys want to work with Ulu Ventures to help launch Octant?
I think it's a combination of a few things. I think one, Sri and I, in thinking about who we wanted on our cap table and investing in the company, it was very important that those people had a strong sense of like wanting to be associated with and build a founder-driven company and a company that's going to take risks and really aim for the long term. And just working with Miriam in the past and then also seeing the portfolio she was assembling at Ulu, it was like very clear to me that we were very values aligned, both in that and then also values aligned in the culture that we wanted to build in the company. And Sri mentioned how important culture is to us. I mean, Miriam's track record in building great cultures and hiring very diverse teams and investing in very diverse founders is just admirable. And those are the types of people we want to associate with. I really appreciate both sort of the Ulu perspective on being very, very data driven and being very rational and adhering to sort of the scenario analysis that Ulu does when they work through their companies. I think that was valuable for us because what we're doing is what, you know, if you go to the incumbents in our industry and you talk to them about what we're doing, there's probably a lot of eye rolling and snickering. And I think it takes a lot to get a company from the sort of disruptive early stage that we came from and actually have it make a difference. And a lot of that is faith and a lot of this hard work, but a lot of it is also like strategy and scenario planning and game theory. And I think Ulu is really strong in that area. And so having their help on that front was big as well.
What are your big dreams for Octant Bio?
I think the dream is really that we can have important effects in patients' lives for big complex disease areas. I think, you know, a lot of us go into science to have an effect in the world. And part of that is to discover new things. But like, I think a big part of it is really to build better and more rational approaches to interact with biology and in particular, like human biology. And I'd like for Octant to make a dent, especially in the world of complex diseases, a place that I feel like we aren't investing enough of our efforts in a time when, you know, the technological changes have just been really profound. I do think that there are really exciting new approaches to go and explore, and we should be doing that, and people should be making those bets. I want Octant to be the place that I would love to work at for the rest of my life. I think tech has done this really well with its companies. I don't think biotech has really done that as well. I mean, it's not to say there's not great cultures out there, but it's definitely the case that a lot of big biotechs get their start by, you know, these non-founders. And that's okay. It's a different model, but I do think that the cultures are almost necessarily a little different.
I was really struck by, you know, the Moore's Law in 20 seconds and why there was this big lag. The power that shows up in terms of asking questions and seeking answers, and then the lag between people you know, wanting to jump on that curve. What's your insight about that mismatch? Maybe you could expand on that.
In terms of the Moore's Law, yeah, I do think that there is this, there's been a series of technologies that have changed. The people that are the best practitioners in the world at those technologies have really all been trained in the last 10 years. I think there's this kind of disconnect between how fast biology and the technologies underlying them are moving versus our ability to treat disease. There's like a lot of talk a lot out there about like how there's diminishing returns on pharmaceutical investment and like the actual drugs aren't that much better like one generation to the other. I think it goes along two things. One is there has been amazing progress, right? So if you look at the data coming from rare diseases and cancer where you just had like no treatment to complete cures in using things like gene therapy or immune engineering. So there has been a lot of progress and there's a lot of excitement in those areas. I think the second part of that is the area that Octon's going after is that complex diseases, these big disease areas have been very different. The hope was that we'd find a bunch of great targets after the completion of the Human Genome Project, and that it would be like less hard than what the challenge we're facing, which is biology is incredibly complex. The most interesting phenotypes, things like intelligence and obesity and emotion and these kinds of things that make us really special as in biology, we're still grasping at straws. We're still at a very early stage. So I think that disconnect is the change, is that we are making really fast progress in some areas, but in other areas, we're just seeing like, we're just opening up even more complexity. And we think we have an approach that at least will give us a lot more rationality on stuff. But like, I think there's going to be a lot that's going to have to happen in the next 50 years for us to make headway in those areas.
The other thing I'd say that's a huge consequence of that growth curve is it's our belief that it fundamentally changes how you design a company and how you run a company. So for example, sometimes people look at us and say, you open source that? Like, why did you do that? Like that, you know, isn't that valuable? Shouldn't you put patents all over it and keep it away from other people? And the answer is no, actually, in this new world where the technology is like moving faster and producing more data than anyone can actually keep up with, one of the lessons we're learning from tech here is actually you want to share that stuff and you want to build community around it. And then you'll still reap the gains because you'll still have really great people who are native in those technologies and can sort of take that to the next level as well. And so it also changes the face of experimentation, right? Like we now live in an age where the people, we have single people in our company can run tens to hundreds of thousands of experiments simultaneously in hours, right? Like, what does that mean for what it means to be a scientist and how you sort of decision tree your way through which experiments do you run? How much time do you spend on them? Like one of the things that's been very important about building this company is really trying to recruit and train people who feel natively comfortable in that kind of a massively parallel environment. It's not quite the same thing as computing because there is a sort of moving atoms around part to this that people in computing don't have to deal with, but there are a lot of parallels in terms of just thinking and adapting different talent models for how we build teams, how those teams move very quickly, how they de-risk the things they're working on, how we sort of pursue business models in a time where like the things we might be working on today might be obsolete 4 years from now because technology is moving that fast now. And that's actually one of the things that Sri and I get really, really excited about is like, how do we think about building excellence into an organization that's going to actually try to ride this insanely fast wave.